You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 171 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Catwoman number 16, Detective Comics 1013, Event Leviathan number 5, Justice League Odyssey number 14, Superman number 16, The Joker Year of the Villain number 1, Wonder Twins number 8, Wonder Woman number 80, Batwoman season 1 episode 2, The Rabbit Hole, Supergirl season 5 episode 2, Stranger Beside Me, Black Lightning season 3 episode 2, The Book of Occupation, Chapter 2, Miriam's Tejbi, Flash, Season 6, Episode 2, A Flash of Lightning, Titans, Season 2, Episode 6, Connor, and Arrow, Season 8, Episode 1, Starling City. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC is introducing a new Prestige Plus format in 2020. Prestige Plus is a new name for a format that DC introduced earlier this year for some of its DC Black Label titles. Square-bound comic books that measure 8.5 inches by 10.875 inches and come with cardstock covers. If you picked up the print editions of Superman Year One or Joker, Harley Quinn, Criminal Insanity, you've already seen the format. But now it has a name.
I think it's a cool idea. I mean, you've got to come up with ways to keep people buying single issues, right?
Definitely.
And we both enjoyed, I mean, I know they weren't the same exact style format, but we enjoyed the Prestige issues that they've been putting out previously, like the Dead Man one or the Supergirl miniseries. Those were both great.
Yeah, they were.
The one that I saw in the article that I'm excited about is The Many Deaths of Vic Sage with The Question. And I'm really curious to see what that whole story is about. I think that could be pretty good.
Yeah, that could be pretty good. All right, up next for DC News, Bendis promises Superman's identity reveal is not a fake out. Writer Brian Michael Bendis has confirmed that when Clark Kent reveals that he is Superman to the world in December Superman number 18, the change will last for the unseeable future. Bendis tells the New York Times his planned twist will open up 1,000 Superman stories that have never been told. You know, this identity reveal, he said it's going to last for a long time. It's probably going to last until Brian Michael Bendis is off Superman.
Exactly. Yes, and you're exactly right. It's just, I absolutely believe him that that's the story that he wants to tell. I mean, it makes sense logically from where he's been going with the story anyway. He's clearly not interested in Clark Kent, to be totally honest with you. Like, from the stories that we've been seeing, he's very interested in Superman the Alien.
Yeah.
He's not super interested in Clark Kent the Secret Identity, which is fine. That if that's what he wants to write, that's what he wants to write. It's just frustrating to me because he's making it that 1,000 new stories that have never been told. It literally was just told. We just did this freaking story like 3 years ago. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but not that long ago. Superman had his identity exposed.
Well, apparently Bendis lives in the past.
But apparently not, because he missed it. It's just frustrating because they just did this story and it was not popular. Like, and part of that was, I mean, Bendis is definitely a better writer than what was going on at that point, but like, they did that story, it was not well received. It didn't do that well, and they're basically just like, okay, but what if we ran that back? That's the part that doesn't make sense to me. I think I honestly would be more open to the story that he's trying to do if we hadn't just seen it bomb a couple years ago.
Yeah, well, I haven't read the story because that was before I started reading comics again. So,
and there's no real point to it because nothing about that story matters. It was right towards the tail end of the New 52. It got completely Superman, but was the most like redone character by Rebirth, I would say. I mean, they basically just completely scrapped the New 52. Yeah, as we saw at the very beginning, they basically took the alternate dimension Clark Kent and made him the new Superman. Like, the New 52 Superman just went away.
Well, he kind of merged with them or something.
Yeah, but I mean, he went away. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that, so I wouldn't recommend, I honestly would have a hard time recommending anybody read that story because nothing, it was not a particularly good one, first off, and nothing about that story has any significance. Like, there's nothing particularly historically significant about that comic that was like, this is the first time this character pops up, and it's not a good story either. Like, I just skip it, and I hope Bendis does something more interesting with it, otherwise it's going to be doing the same story and swinging and missing on it twice.
Yeah, let's hope that doesn't happen. I know I'm not that interested in Superman that's not Clark Kent, but we'll see what happens.
I think it'll be okay, to be honest with you, because we've basically just been reading Superman without Clark Kent anyway, for the most part. I'd say what, maybe an 80-20 split? So I don't really think we're going to have that huge of a change. If anything, it might draw more attention to Clark for a little bit, just because he's going to have to deal with the fact that he doesn't have the identity anymore. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. Scott Snyder is exiting Justice League in January. Superstar scribe Scott Snyder says farewell to the Justice League with a special story that both winds down all things he started in issue number one and nods towards everything that will come next in the DC universe.
This was shocking to me. I really didn't think we were that close to the end with this story.
I know, it doesn't feel like it. That means the end is coming really sooner than I thought it was going to.
I mean, it definitely is building up towards a climax, but I thought we were going to get the same sort of pseudo-climax that we've gotten a bunch with this whole run, right? The one big thing with this is because it just keeps boom, 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 new things keep happening. There's what sort of feels like a conclusion, but it's really just like leading to something even bigger, and it just keeps snowballing and snowballing. That's what this felt like. I don't know if that's just a consequence of the style that he's doing the story in, but I wonder if he like changed his mind or something. We've been all pretty, the year of the villain thing is centered mostly on what he's doing in Justice League, and yeah, it didn't start in January.
No, it didn't. It started in May or June, something like that.
I'm very surprised because it really doesn't feel like we've truly gotten to what he was actually trying to get at.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know.
I feel like something happened.
Yeah. I can't see somebody else finishing the story, though.
I don't either, but I wonder if he's just going to quickly wrap it up in a way that was not intended originally to wrap it up.
That's very possible. All right. Let's move on to our last bit of DC news. Watchmen premiered. Draws 1.5 million viewers. Unfortunately, I was not one of those 1.5 million viewers.
It's real good, in my opinion.
Have you seen it then?
Yeah. It's highly recommended.
So, I take it you got HBO.
Yeah.
So, I'd have to get HBO again to see it.
Well, I've got HBO Go. I don't have the actual like channel, but
I may get it just to watch Watchmen. I don't know yet. I haven't decided. I thought about that, or I thought about waiting to see if it comes to DC Universe.
It's possible. The thing that I would suggest if you're on the fence about it is I would probably wait until HBO Max comes out.
Yeah, because I will have I will have HBO Max because I'm planning on getting it. So
I would probably just wait for that. It is very good, though. In my opinion, I really enjoyed it.
That's good. I want to review it at some point, but we got so many freaking shows now. That I'd like to just review like season one or something.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you agree with that too.
I do. I can't. Like, I watched it and I was like, "Damn, that was good." I also don't want to review this every week, not because I didn't like it, because I was like, I can't add another one.
I know the show's already getting long enough as it is. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Where comedy and commentary collide.
Thunder Talk brings a unique variety show style twist
to the fandom podcast genre.
We drop music from some of today's hottest up-and-coming artists.
We discuss topics of social and political relevance.
And deliver our sideways take on the world at large.
If stand-up comedy,
NPR,
the Millennium Falcon,
and classic MTV had a baby,
it would be Thunder Talk.
Thunder Talk is part of the ESO Network. Find us at thundertalk.org and on all podcasting platforms.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you.
For you.
All right, let's talk Catwoman number 16. I did not like how this issue opened up, because it began with the defeat of Catwoman at the Lazarus Pit, and we didn't even learn how it happened. We see Catwoman try to track down Raina Kriel after the defeat at the Lazarus Pit, which we don't know anything about. We saw the deal with Luther is before the Lazarus defeat, but we still don't know what that deal is. We also saw Catwoman have a weird change in costume. And then we get the doom symbol in the sky above Villa Hermosa at the end of the issue. Does that mean Catwoman had accepted Luther's offer? Or does that just mean something else? Your thoughts?
Honestly, I'm going to say my biggest thought was I was so thrilled Joelle Jones was back. I actually really enjoyed this issue just because she was back on the writing and art. It felt like the Catwoman book that we started reading at the beginning. I don't know if that, like, it has some of the weird kind of choppy story stuff that we've seen. But I kind of liked that it just jumped straight to her losing at the Lazarus Pit, because it, to me, and I'm sure we'll get a little bit of more information with that, to me, it cut out stuff that we didn't really need to see. You know what I mean? Think about the previous stories that we've been reading with Catwoman, how we've gotten all this weird extraneous information that didn't do anything. This story, I thought, cut to the chase and was like, look, she obviously chases them down to the Lazarus Pit. I honestly can buy that without needing to read that. And then we see her lose, and then we kind of see what she's doing after that loss. I'm okay with that storytelling decision, to be honest with you.
Okay, I wasn't. I don't know. It was too choppy for me.
I will say the one part that was confusing was the weird switch to her old school costume. But it was, I mean, the art was really good on it, so I was like, this is a sweet spread page. I don't understand it, but it's really good looking.
I know, we went like Golden Age costume, I think.
But I'm sure we're going to get more info with that. Like, I don't know. I feel like if Joelle Jones is doing the next issue also, I believe it will make sense.
I hope so.
I'm just going, based on the stuff that we got from her in the beginning of the Catwoman run, there was some, she kind of played around with that a little bit too, and it was less, it was far less confusing when she did it to me than when other writers were doing it after her.
All right, I'll hold judgment until the next issue.
I think one reason I say that is obviously I like her art, but her artwork is very clear. to me. Like, it's really obvious what's going on. And I feel like some of the other artists that we've gotten, it's not super clear or as clear what's actually happening in a panel. I really think that matters. I really think having a good artist can make up for some confusing writing because you can actually visually understand what you're seeing on the page.
I'm wondering if she's doing the writing and art again because she's going to be leaving the book soon. Because we know Tom King's run is ending in Batman, and he's going to be doing a Batman and Catwoman book. She's not going to be off on her own for very much longer, so.
I agree with you. I do feel like we're coming towards the end of this book, or at least towards the end of Jones's run, even though it did sort of end for a while, and now she's back. She did write and draw this, so I'm wondering if she's going to be... I wonder if she's finishing the book off. We haven't heard anything.
No, we haven't, so we'll just have to wait and see. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics 1013. So Batman finds out from the goons that were trying to abduct the woman from last issue that Mr. Freeze is their boss. And using a new special suit, Batman battles Freeze and is trying to bring the abducted women back to the Batcave to revive them. I had to laugh at Alfred when he put that Flash mask on to hide his identity. And of course, we get to the end of the issue and Freeze revives Nora. We saw that coming a mile away.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was one of the things I was like, I mean, if Batman just stops him before he revives Nora, then what was the point of the story? I still hold true to what I said last time, which was that Freeze is inexplicably stupid about sending them back.
Yeah.
Because, like, especially when you see what he does, he is so hyper-prepared in this issue. It does that mistake in the previous issue makes no sense. Like, that's obviously a mistake.
Yeah.
And then in this one, he's clever enough to do all of these things to get Batman off of his trail. Like, he's prepared enough to get rid of Batman, but he's not prepared enough to think that maybe we shouldn't go back. I don't know.
Criminals are a stupid and superstitious lot. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Event Leviathan number 5. So, Zatanna's team thinks Leviathan is Sam Lane, and Lois is less than thrilled to hear this. So, we see Zatanna's team goes to investigate Sam Lane, who almost gets assassinated by some dude who looks like the Ray. And Zatanna is able to teleport Sam and Lois away. And I was not sure if Sam Lane survived that. I couldn't tell.
I'm fairly certain he died. I'm pretty sure we saw him die.
Okay. That's what I thought, but I wasn't for sure.
Yeah.
We also see Superman finds Leviathan and confronts them. And Leviathan unmasks to Superman, but not to the audience. So we're still left in the dark on that.
I feel like Bendis sort of told us who it is, but I felt dumb enough too dumb to understand who it's supposed to be.
Okay, that was leading to my next thing. Batman's team figure out Leviathan is someone who has been the Manhunter before. And Talia al Ghul shows up at the end demanding the Manhunter step out of the Batvan. That's what I'm calling that thing, the Batvan. So, I think that's what Bendis was hinting, that whoever the previous Manhunter was is who Leviathan is. I don't know much about the Manhunter.
I literally know nothing.
So
I know nothing. I didn't even know it was a character until I started reading this book.
So
I could, that was like the best insult that Bendis could have said to me was that, like, it was like not insult, but like I have never felt so dumb reading a comic. I was like, wow, I really think he just told me the answer and I'm too stupid to get it.
I'm guessing there's quite a few DC people that don't know who the Manhunter is, because I don't think it was a popular character. I could be wrong, but it wasn't popular that I remember. The Manhunters are the machines that the Green Lanterns fought.
or Martian Manhunter.
Or yeah, or the Martian Manhunter. But I highly doubt that's who this is.
I swear to God, if Bendis makes Martian Manhunter a villain, after he was a semi-antagonist during the New 52. I'm like, dude, come on.
I don't think that's who it is.
Give us one win.
So apparently we're supposed to find out next issue who Leviathan is. So, and it feels like the event's going to be wrapping up. I can't remember how many issues it's supposed to be.
Six is the normal, but I don't think it's six. I feel like it's supposed to be more.
Okay, that's what I had a feeling too, but I guess we'll find out. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Odyssey number 14. I like the take charge Jessica Cruz in this story. But I got to tell you one thing, Cletus. The artwork has much to be desired, especially Jessica Cruz, because her face just looked terrible during the whole issue.
Yeah, I agree completely. I was pretty underwhelmed by the story overall. I mean, because not a ton happens. And also, I found Jessica to be really inconsistently characterized in this. They went with this new look attitude for her, which is fine. But then they like immediately revert back to some of like paranoia and other things with her. And I was like, wait, what are we like? Are you trying to do both Jessica personalities here? Like, you got to pick one.
I like the take charge Jessica.
Honestly. I mean, I was fine. I honestly was fine with it. But then you know what I'm talking about? When they switch to the part where she's getting Cyborg's message.
She yeah.
absolutely, completely reverts back to old Jessica Cruz. It was weird. I just thought it was an odd choice.
I don't know. But I like her being in charge of this team. And I hope that continues. We also found out a cult's identity. It's Orion, which I was surprised. I was not expecting that. So we have the son of Darkseid. And of course, we found out the whole reason why he was wearing that costume and trying to keep his identity a secret was because the Eschaton are coming for the new gods. Now that he's unmasked, they're coming after him. So, I'm liking this part of the story a lot better than the previous part, the previous story. So, I like this new mix of characters. I'm finding them interesting.
It definitely requires less the suspension of belief than the initial story did, for sure.
All right, well, let's move on to the next title for this week. Superman number 16. The Super Sons are back. We see John and Damian catch up. So we kind of see them catch up. And, of course, Damian's in disbelief how old John is now. We see John and Superman have a talk at the fortress and say their goodbyes. Saturn Girl shows up and John leaves with her. And, okay, so Saturn Girl shows up and John leaves. All right, and the one thing I have to say about this issue was I thought the artwork looked a little bulky and cartoonish, which doesn't really fit with the tone of a Superman comic, but it kind of fits with a Super Sons, you know what I mean?
It was a really bad version of the the Super Sons artwork that we had.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like it looked like it was somewhat intentional to look like the style of art that the Super Sons book had, but it wasn't good. You know what I mean? Like it was a poor imitation of it. And then as soon as it switched away from that and switched back to Superman looked awful. I thought
the thing that bothered me the most was the big clunky boots.
Well, I just because it didn't feel stylistic, if that makes sense. Like it felt like somebody trying to do a style that's not naturally how they draw. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, maybe that is how this artist draws. It felt like they were trying to do something that wasn't comfortable for them. Like it didn't feel like because sometimes it felt a little JRJR-ish with John. Sometimes John's face looked really like kind of how John Romita Jr. does his faces without all of the extra lines that JR does. But then other times it looked more like they were trying to do what – I can't remember who the artist was on Super Sons, but do it more like him. And just – I don't know. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but it just didn't seem like it was an actual stylistic choice, more so as like an attempt at imitation that didn't work that well.
Yeah, I didn't care for it, that's for sure. But the story was okay.
It was okay. It felt like it was there as a sort of like a to placate fans of John, to be totally honest with you, than a story that Bendis actually had any interest in writing.
Yeah, agreed.
Because in my opinion, there was no real emotional talk about, like, I did not feel the emotional stakes of John effectively saying goodbye to Damian and saying goodbye to his dad. You know, it wasn't the same. I felt like we got more of that with his mom in the previous issue.
In the Lois Lane
issue. I mean, which was written by Rucka. But in this one, it felt more like Bendis doing it because he had to.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like.
He was like, I gotta do this, so let's just do this issue. You guys can whatever, and you can shut up, and I can do my story without John. That's what it read like, where it was like he was trying to hit the notes that he thought people would want, but he didn't actually want to tell that story.
And you could tell.
Yeah.
It's probably why they stuck a sucky artist on him. Yeah.
Honestly, probably.
All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. The Joker, You're the Villain Number One. Not the greatest Joker story out there, but still very Joker.
I thought it was okay, but you recall, I believe it was last episode, I recommended the graphic novel Joker by Azzarello. This is basically, I know it's by John Carpenter, but this is basically like a single issue version of that graphic novel, where you see it all through a henchman's eyes, and the henchman realizes at the end that the Joker's just a freaking psychopath. You know what I mean?
Like, you couldn't tell that before?
Well, no, but it was... Honestly, that was the thing I was sort of taken aback by this issue. I was like, because this dude never read Joker. It almost felt like he'd either read it and was trying to pass it off as his own story, or what? I don't know. I honestly wasn't impressed, because I was like, this would be a good story if I hadn't read this graphic novel. I'm not saying it's the most famous Joker graphic novel. It's not, but it's fairly well known. It's the exact same story. It is the exact same story.
Yeah. Okay.
The only difference is that Joker isn't dressed up as Batman. You know what I mean? Like, there's obviously subtle differences that Carpenter throws in. I'm not saying that he completely plagiarized the story, but if you read this and then read the other one, you would basically assume that they had both been given the same prompt, and that were their version of the same prompt. The other thing I thought was odd with this is that it didn't follow the Year of the Villain formula at all. It had absolutely nothing to do with the Year of the Villain.
Yeah, it had nothing to do with it.
It was a fine story, and honestly, if people haven't read the Joker graphic novel, they'll probably enjoy this more, because it'll be, frankly, a relatively original story to them. So if you haven't read it, this issue will be fine. If you have read that graphic novel, honestly, you're going to think, in my opinion, you're going to think they are extremely similar. And then if you're reading it because you were hoping to see whatever Lex Luthor's deal with the Joker was, you're going to be massively disappointed, because it's nothing to do with the Year of the Villain at all.
Nope, we don't even see Lex at all.
And no status quo change or anything. It was just...
An adventure with the Joker.
Yeah.
During the time when Bane's over Gotham and Batman's not around, so...
But that doesn't even fit continuity-wise, because the Joker is under Bane's control in City of Bane.
Is he? I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember it's him and Riddler on the beat together.
Oh yeah,
keep in mind, all of those villains are doing that because they've been brainwashed by Psycho Pirate.
Right.
So it's not like it's Joker on his own choosing to do that. That's a under control of Psycho Pirate, Joker and Riddler.
Yeah, that's true. The only thing I can think of, if this would fit into continuity, it'd have to be before he got brain zapped by Psycho
Pirate. I'm sure technically it probably is, but really it's just, frankly, it's just somebody not really totally paying attention to what the story is really what it is. I'm just telling you, because there's not even an editorial note that says this takes place in between these.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It would be extremely easy to do that.
So this one's just out there. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Wonder Twins number 8. The big high school reunion is on everybody's mind, including Principal Turner and librarian Ms. Temple, who dated in high school. Mr. Turner is afraid to face Ms. Temple because he dumped her all those years ago and sees that as a big mistake. We also see Polly Math break out of prison. And Jaina confronts her with an apology and the opportunity to find her father. And then we see Zan take a crack at a career as a casino boss at the reunion.
Which is by far the best part of the comic. I enjoyed all of it. I enjoyed the whole comic. But oh my god, I knew the joke too. As soon as he was like, "I'll try to run a casino the way they're actually run," I knew what the joke was going to be, and it was still hilarious.
I know, it was freaking hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Break his legs.
I don't like what I've turned into.
you guys are the real animals. That was so funny. Oh my gosh. This is such a fun title. I cannot recommend this enough to people.
I know. If you guys haven't checked it out yet, you've got to check it out. Of course, I don't know why you're listening to us talk about it. Yeah, awesome. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Wonder Woman number 70. Man, Wonder Woman is at her worst. Steve's left her, her weapons have been destroyed, the god Aphrodite has been killed, and the world is without love. We see Cheetah is still on the loose with the sword God Killer bound to her, and Cheetah wants to kill more gods. We see that Veronica Kale gives Wonder Woman the solution to separate Cheetah from the sword. And when Wonder Woman uses it in their battle, and she puts it on the sword, it actually gives Cheetah more power. And we see Wonder Woman is yet betrayed again. When we didn't think she could get any lower, this happens.
I was thinking earlier in the issue when Veronica Kale was helping her yet again for the second issue in a row, I was like, this is highly unlikely that she would be doing this. And then they're like, oh, that makes way more sense.
Yeah, it does. And Wonder Woman should have known better.
That was what I was thinking. I was like, this is so improbable that she would save you out of nowhere last issue when she could have just not done anything and then go further than that and give you a solution to help beat Cheetah. Like, that was... I was honestly prepared to be like, that seems super improbable that she would do those things.
And you would be correct.
especially we've established this is a world in theory without love, right?
Right.
So she would feel nothing in terms of gratitude towards Wonder Woman saving her daughter.
Yep. Which we see. We see what her actual goal was. So at some point, Wonder Woman's got to start winning again.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
And I'm Tony Heath.
And we host the Watchathon of Rassilon.
A journey through all of Doctor Who, one serial at a time.
Listen in, and you will learn about
true facts.
Tune in and hear our
final thoughts.
Find out how little we actually know about science, history,
Doctor Who,
and pretty much anything else.
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
A proud member of the ESO Network.
Available wherever you get your podcast fix.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you.
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman Season 1, Episode 2, The Rabbit Hole. This episode begins with Kate talking to her missing cousin Bruce about the 15 years she spent hoping her sister was still alive after the accident. She fully subscribes to the TV rule, if you don't find a body, assume the person is still alive. So neither the police nor Batman ever found Beth's body. And Kate and her father, Jacob, continued looking long after everyone else had given up. And what we find out is Alice is Beth. And her father has no clue that the manhunt he's leading is for his missing daughter. But we see Kate spending her nights doing recon as Batwoman and is surprised to find out that her suit is bulletproof. Hello.
Oh my god, that was so stupid.
I know.
I'm sorry. I was like, what? I would assume that it was bulletproof, but like, come on. She inexplicably trains underwater in the Arctic to be a security guard, but she doesn't check that her suit's bulletproof.
Yeah. The first time you find out, you're going to let somebody shoot you at point blank range. Okay.
I was also, this episode confused me a little bit at how much Luke Fox was doing with the Batcave. Because this episode made it seem like he was basically doing nothing with it. Because I was really confused initially when she was like, we need to test the knife, the blood on this knife. I was like, dude, in the freaking Batcave.
No kidding.
It's the Batcave.
I know. You have a crime lab right there.
And that, I really was confused by that. It made sense. I will say it made sense later when I realized that Luke Fox basically didn't do anything either with the cave, so neither of them really knew. But I honestly was under the impression in the pilot that Luke was kind of following in his dad's footsteps and running things for Bruce, and it doesn't seem like he totally was.
Yeah. Which,
but did know that Bruce was back. I feel like this show's being really inconsistent on how much Luke was involved.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Because I thought he was more involved than that until this episode too. So we also find out that we see that Kate gets the word to Alice about their meeting place at the Waffle Place, and we have the sisters show up and have a talk. And Kate keeps Alice from being killed when her father shows up with the crows. And of course, Alice surrenders, and then we see her get busted out of the police transport. I mean, that was pretty obvious that was going to happen.
And she wasn't busted out, though. That was an attempt to kill her.
Oh, yeah? Was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, which brings us to the end of the episode. Mary's mother, Catherine, hired the men in the rabbit mask to jump Kate for Alice's knife. And then I'm guessing she was the one who was behind the assassination attempt.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what is going on with her. Is she maybe behind the whole car accident in the first place, or?
I don't think so. My theory is that she is not behind that, that is unrelated.
Okay.
But that she is, we've seen, she is very invested in the crows being accepted as the defense option for the city. To me, this feels similar to the White Knight, that in that it's a rich versus poor story that she is pushing, or like what we've seen in Arrow oftentimes, which is she is pushing the upper class option, which is the crows, which makes her money, whereas Alice is a threat to her making that money, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because she's the only thing that's really disrupted the crows' rule of law that we've seen since the show started. So if you eliminate her, you establish that in your business that she's clearly trying to ensure succeeds.
Yeah. So the big question is Catherine the villain of the season, or is Alice the villain of the season?
I would say neither. I could be wrong. I actually think that Catherine is probably standing in for somebody even above her.
Oh.
She is I believe, and that's why I'm saying I'm trying to compare it to like the White Knight. I think she is representing the wealthy elite's few interests.
Okay.
I think this is a rich versus poor story, and I think she's basically just the current representative that we're seeing.
Okay. All right. I'm invested, so.
I don't think you reveal her as the big bad in episode two like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Supergirl, season 5, episode 2, Stranger Beside Me. We see Brainy gives Nia her best morning breakfast ever with breakfast burritos. Alex almost poisons Kelly with her blueberry pancakes. A lot of relationship stuff going on in this episode. We also see Kara is struggling at Catco with her new boss, Andrea, who's causing all sorts of problems. And we got the new reporter, William, who's suspicious of Kara.
Okay, can I just interject real quick?
Yeah.
Is she... I know, in theory, she is trying to cause problems for Kara. On the other hand, is she not just requiring Kara to fulfill basic job requirements of being present on time and actually working at work?
That could very well
Those were the two... I'm just saying, the two biggest complaints that Kara had the whole time was, oh, I have to go to this meeting that she's supposed to be at. That's her job.
I have the feeling Andrea's more of a micromanager, and Kara just doesn't like it.
Well, but I'm just saying, that didn't just bother me. When I was watching it with my girlfriend, she was bothered by that too. She's like, I don't feel sympathy for her right now, because if any of us tried to do what Kara does, we'd all be fired. And the show is making it seem like she's getting unjust treatment.
That is very true.
She's given an assignment, which I agree is an unfair assignment, but she refuses the assignment. She doesn't show up to a meeting repeatedly, does not show up on time, and then just isn't at work when she's supposed to be at work. If you or I did that, we'd be fired. And the show is making it seem like this is like, oh, poor Kara. Like, I understand that she's Supergirl, but come on. You can't frame that as her as the victim.
No, you can't. Now, they got that William guy acting very mysteriously. One minute he's acting like he's a stalker. The next, he's at a soup kitchen. I'm like, what's up with this guy? Is he a villain? Is he a hero?
That soup kitchen scene thing at the end was so out of left field, which I know is the point. Like, you know that they did that to make you go, what?
But I did go, what?
I was more like, what are you doing? Like, what are you trying to do with this character? Because during that sequence also, we had the most, I would call it peak CW melodrama I have ever seen. So through this whole episode, we have Brainy sort of getting it wrong with trying to shower Dreamer with gifts. And then we see that I my eyes could not possibly have rolled any harder. He's there still trying to recite poetry to her, and she forlornly rolls over and like pouts and puts her arm over her head. And I was like, are you effing kidding me? During the like, it was like the peak melodrama. The musical number is playing. She's like got that forlorn dramatic look. And I was like, over this? Are you kidding me? I cannot boil down CW drama into a finer essence than that 10 seconds of television.
Okay, here comes the big question for you. Do you see a Kara-William relationship in the near future? That's what it felt like to me.
Maybe. I don't know. I almost think that they're not going to do that. Because they went with it a little bit with Jimmy, and then they inexplicably went away from it to go with Mon-El instead, which was fine. And then Mon-El was a pretty controversial love interest overall amongst the fan base. I personally liked him. I think this show, for the most part, probably just wants to stay away from it, I would think.
We'll see, but that's what it felt like to me, so...
You could be right. I don't want to say that you're wrong, because you definitely could be right, but I'm just thinking, based on the show has not found a successful Oliver and Felicity or Barry and Iris. And they've tried. They tried twice and it didn't work. And I almost feel like they're not ready to go for it again yet. I think they're trying to do that with I think they're making up for it with the other relationships. I think that's why they're focusing on like Alex and James's sister, or Dreamer and Brainy. I feel like that's why they're focusing on those other ones, is to make up for the lack of relationship that the main character has.
Now, John's brother we see is the antagonist of this week, and we learn that he's been working with a white Martian, and that he betrayed the Green Martians and was sent to the Phantom Zone. And one of the big things we learned this week is John's missing memories from the Martian Civil War. I'm very curious to find out what's going on with that.
Yeah, it was interesting, but I gotta say, this was, especially this plot in particular, is some of the worst writing I have seen on the show in a while. Like, the dialogue that they had, like, I felt bad for the dude that plays Martian Manhunter. He was throwing out just gobbledygook, and he was trying to, like, do it in such a, like, serious actor voice, and it was, like, just the most ridiculous stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really had a hard time getting into those scenes because it felt like I was watching an actor just spout nonsense and trying to do it with a straight face. And because they were doing, like, it was all exposition instead of, like, you know, showing us and doing things with a, like, I don't know, just telling the story in an engaging way. It was just them just exposition of just all of this made up words and stuff. And, like, I'm a comic book fan, so, like, in theory that should be fine with me, but even I was like, oh, guys, come on.
All right.
Well, like, the White Martian, honestly, what did it even amount to?
I don't even know what the White Martian's goal is or what he's doing there.
They made it seem like he's dead. It's like he's not even a factor.
That he's dead?
Towards the end of the episode, they made it seem like that encounter, the initial encounter that they had between the two, killed the White Martian.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
I'm pretty sure he said, "You killed my partner," or whatever.
Okay.
I was really taken aback by that because I was like, wait, what? I thought they were gonna be like a duo or something, because they made such a big deal out of him working with somebody, and then they just like, oh, he's dead, and I was like, what? What's going on?
Well, we get to the end of the episode, and we see Lena basically turns Eva into her computer. Pretty much what it is, a biological computer.
One thing I thought that was really interesting, just from a TV perspective, is I had been thinking the whole time that Eva had been looking really, like, sloppy compared to how she's been, like, just appearance-wise on the show.
Uh-huh.
And I figured part of that was just because she was being held prisoner. And then when she is taken over by the AI and all of a sudden she looks more like the Eva that we've been seeing, I was like, I see what you guys were getting at.
But, you know, overall, it wasn't a bad episode of Supergirl.
I'm not going to say it was an awful episode. I really didn't think it was particularly good, though. And my girlfriend really didn't like it. I was surprised because she's generally, unsurprisingly, more into Supergirl than I am, although I do enjoy the show. She really didn't like this one. I would say even less than I did, which was surprising.
Huh. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 3, Episode 2, The Book of Occupation, Chapter 2. Jefferson and Lynn are still in their ASA prison, or protective custody, as Odell likes to put it. We see Jefferson is frustrated and almost seems to be exhibiting new powers like X-ray vision. Lynn's main concern is helping Miriam, the woman we met last week who could blend into any background. Her powers are causing her hair to fall out and her eyes to bleed, and it seems certain that she will die soon. We see Anissa running around as Blackbird, trying to help Meta stay free, and the Purdy are not too pleased to be helping Blackbird. And then we see Jennifer is having troubles at school. She's still trying to cope with Khalil's death. And Gambi and Chief Henderson are working together to steal some tech that could help save Anissa and the Metas. And, of course, we see Lala return and takes control of the 100. And Odell resurrects Khalil and creates a new weapon out of him, calling him Painkiller. Which he, to test out Painkiller, he sends him to kill his own mother.
Which seemed like that was in retaliation for the TV leak thing that happened.
there was that weird, or not, it was online, but there was some sort of like the ASA isn't really out to help us.
Oh yeah, that was at the beginning of the episode.
And Gambi, it was weird the way they like they were almost too subtle about it, because they had Gambi be like, ah, you should have disguised your voice, and then the show just sort of moved on. But that was clearly Cleo's mom. That was that voice.
Yeah, I forgot about that actually. So
well,
I
don't blame you. I thought the show was almost. In contrast to what the CW shows often do, where they really slap you in the face with what the show is doing, that was almost too subtle, where they did not make it particularly clear that was definitely one of the reasons why he did that mission, was to silence her, basically.
Yeah, that would make sense. Odell would do that.
Absolutely.
Black Lightning feels a little weird this season so far, with Jefferson being stuck in ASA prison, but still, the show is still really good.
I'm definitely enjoying it. It does feel like we're kind of stuck in first gear a little bit still. Like, it feels like we're kind of in a prolonged first episode.
Yeah.
I'm really, but it feels like it's building up to something that's going to be super interesting. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's intentionally simmering, because you know it's about to blow up, and I feel like that is going to be really cool. The only other thing I really wanted to talk about with this episode, I found the Blackbird stuff really odd. Like, I didn't understand why the conflict was so. Like, why? Why were they so? Like, the lack of compromise. Like, she was not even remotely heroic with that, and then the Sanjay just basically being like, you guys got to go right now, also didn't, like, it was, both sides were like inexplicably hard-headed, and I didn't get that.
Yeah, it was kind of weird, wasn't it?
It was just odd, because it was extremely uncharacteristic for both sides. I thought both sides were like, I was like, wait, what? Why are they being so hard about, you guys have to leave right now, when, as Blackbird says, you guys took this deal? What are you talking about? But then also, Blackbird choking the dad out? What? Like, that was weird. That whole sequence was super weird to me.
Yeah, it was. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 6, Episode 2, A Flash of Lightning. So, the episode picks up immediately where we left off last week, with Barry and Iris in the Time Vault, processing the monitor's news that Flash must die to save the multiverse. Barry decides to gather more information about his death by speeding to December 11th, 2019, the day after he's supposed to die. Unfortunately, an antimatter barrier blocks Flash from going to the future, and instead he decides to visit Jay Garrick on Earth 3. Which was awesome. I love the fact that we got Jay Garrick in this episode.
Yeah, I really enjoyed having Jay on the show too. You know, you and I both love every time he's on the show. And I really like even just that subtle omen of like, there's some sort of antimatter wall blocking him. You're like, for comic book fans, that's so exciting to get that.
Yeah, that is. So we have Barry go visit Jay, and we get to meet Jay's wife, which was Dr. Joan Williams, which was basically Nora Allen's doppelganger, his mother. So that was just interesting to see that. We see them hook him up to a device that can project his consciousness across the Speed Force and past the antimatter barrier, and Barry is immediately shown billions of timelines in which everyone he loves and everyone in the multiverse dies in a blood red antimatter wave.
He pulls what we call the Doctor Strange move. He only sees one future that works. Sadly, it's not Tony Stark this time, but
yeah. Yeah. So that was interesting. So at least Barry's got a key, or maybe an idea of how, you know, which future will work. We'll see how that plays out, though, in the future.
The run where he runs himself into oblivion, like he does in Crisis.
Yeah.
That was so cool. That's what I'm talking about. With the even now, we're getting those hints about Crisis in Flash. And then we'll talk about it later when we talk with Arrow. Like, I love how we're getting this stuff with Crisis right now.
I know. It's so awesome. So while Barry is on Earth 3, we see Team Flash deal with Allegra Garcia, a metahuman who controlled different wavelengths and is accused of murdering someone while trying to hijack their car. And we see that Cecile is ready to throw the book at her, but relents when she senses that Allegra definitely didn't commit the crime. Team Flash learns that Esperanza, Allegra's cousin, is the one who killed the driver, not Allegra. And Esperanza attacks the precinct, intent on killing Allegra because she's now an assassin for some secret group that doesn't want anybody to know she's alive, not even her cousin. And of course we see that when Barry comes back to the present, he's able to stop her.
This secret group thing was really interesting to me because it, in this episode, we also get more slow buildup with blood work. And I have to say, I am pleasantly surprised at how slow they're dealing with him. Like, we're getting just tiny little segments with him, which is good because I'm pretty sure we're going to get a full season of him. So at least we're getting it in small doses. But so this, I think they can maybe get away with it a little bit because it seems like we might be getting a mini arc with this organization.
Yeah, which is nice because maybe they're starting to learn from some of their past mistakes.
I would argue they could learn it better, but this is a step in the right, potentially maybe a step in the right direction. It could just also be a red herring.
Yeah. So we see three things coming out of this episode. One, there's a shadow organization out there using metahumans as assassins. Two, Allegra is hired on to the citizen by Iris. So I'm guessing we're going to see her as a recurring character during the season. And number three, Cecile decides to quit the DA's office and become a defense attorney for metahumans. So I'm guessing we're going to see more of that this season too.
That I thought it's a really cool idea. I also just like it because she was pretty consistently terrible at actually doing what a DA is supposed to do.
Yeah, because
I'm
keeps
not saying that she was a bad lawyer. She was shown regularly to be a good lawyer, but she was not typically doing her job as a DA.
One thing
Joe had a fantastic point. Is all I'm saying.
There was one thing that was clearly been absent from this and the first episode, and that's Harrison Wells of any version of him. So I'm wondering how that's going to play out in coming episodes, because we know he's going to show up at some point.
I have read some articles. I'm pretty sure he's popping up next episode.
Okay, cool. No spoilers.
And not like spoilery art. No, not like spoil. Like Flash is promoting that he's coming in next episode.
Okay, cool. Haven't seen that yet, but I can tell you that the Flash is aired by the time we're doing this, and I'm excited about watching it.
Yeah, neither of us have seen it. I'm not speaking from a place of knowledge. I've just seen articles being put out.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to, before we move on, the other thing I want to mention was Ralph in this episode. He seems to be going into detective mode finally. I mean, where he's like working on his own case kind of thing. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah, oh yeah, I agree. If we can get more Detective Ralph, I think that's great. I am all aboard on that.
And rumor has it we're going to be seeing Sue this season, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's exciting. That's super exciting.
All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Titans Season 2, Episode 6, Connor. The episode starts off right after Connor kills the guards and Cadmus. We see Connor grab some clothes off a security guard to clothe himself, and then the clone just walks away into the city with Crypto by his side. We see Eve Watson, the doctor who helped create Connor, shows up, hungover in a party dress at Cadmus. Eve explains to Mercy Graves that Connor is walking into a world as a blank slate. He has the memories of two people whose DNA created him, Superman and Lex Luthor. Now, haunted by the memories of Luthor being beaten by his abusive father, Connor heads for the farm where the world's smartest man grew up and encounters Lionel Luthor, a frail, aging, and alone man in a Kansas farmhouse.
But he does it unintentionally because he thinks he's going to the Kent farm.
Yeah, he does.
He's got both. And he's got – what I thought was super interesting is he's got both of their memories, and obviously they just kind of muddle together. And so he thinks he's going to the Kent farm because he's thinking about the happy memory, and then he accidentally finds himself at the Luther farm. I found that whole scene really interesting. I really liked what they did with Lionel Luther.
Yeah, I did too. I mean, he was totally different from the Lionel Luther we've seen in Smallville, so.
And what I thought was interesting is you could see the menace that used to be present, but at this point, it's just a frail old man.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I also thought it was interesting how much the shadow of Lex hung over this episode. It feels like we're going to have to see him, right? Like,
you would think, but the show hasn't come out and said they've casted anybody for Luther, which I find odd if they're going to have Luther in it, but Getz tell me that we might not get Luther. We might get Luther off screen again, and I'm like, ugh. We don't need that like we did with Batman or Bruce Wayne.
They focused on him. I feel like, but the problem is if you're not going to show him, you could have not focused on him so heavily. You know what I mean? They could have played it up a lot more from the. They could have played the Cadmus angle up a lot more and sort of hinted that Lex was behind it like he usually is, but like left it somewhat unsaid. This episode is so clear that Lex is the threat, not necessarily Cadmus. I mean, Cadmus, but really Lex.
Yeah, it did. You're right.
I feel like you have to show him. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Attacked by Cadmus goons, we get an awesome fight scene with Superboy and Crypto. And once defeated, Eve shows Connor where they came from. So, you know, he learns right away that he's a clone.
Yeah, which is good. I wouldn't have wanted that to be strung out.
Yeah, and it didn't need to be. Not here in this show. It wouldn't. I don't think it would fit too well. I do see him in future episodes maybe struggling with the some of the memories he has from Lex. Maybe he might be doing that kind of thing. But we'll see.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think we are definitely going to be seeing an unstable Connor Kent for sure.
Yeah. Now, at the end of the episode, Superboy saves Jason Todd falling from his death from the last episode. And then seconds after saving Robin, we see Superboy get shot by kryptonite bullets, courtesy of Mercy Graves. And that's kind of where the episode ends. One of the things I want to say is, I was not happy with the comic news outlets, because when you clearly put in your title that Robin gets saved, when I haven't even seen the episode, that ticks me off.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with you 100%. I don't know how many times we've talked about this. There's not that much to report with comic news, and so anytime they really almost exclusively report spoilers because that's the only news. It's annoying. It's really annoying. I know we are saying this as a podcast that talks about comic book news, but I feel like we at least have the courtesy to warn you repeatedly that there's spoilers involved.
Yeah, we have the spoiler song. You guys come to listen to us because we talk about spoilers. But it's not like when you come to listen to our podcast, you know we're going to be talking spoilers, so you're choosing to do it. Not that it pops up as it pops up on your phone as a, like a message kind of thing, and I'm like, what are you doing? It's not even like I'm subscribed to that site. It just pops up on my screen.
Well, but that's the problem is you and I are inherently more at – it's ironic because – most people, in theory, who could watch this show would never have known that spoiler was out there because they would just be watching the show. But ironically, because you and I are so into this and other shows and into the comic book news stuff, we are just inherently at a higher risk of getting spoiled because we're going to see those things. Like, those articles are articles that we're going to see.
Yeah. And
it just sucks. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And sometimes that stuff pops up, you know, like how a text message would pop up. Sometimes news articles pop up on my phone, and I don't know what app is doing it, but it'll pop things up on my phone. Some of them are like, it's like, some of it's political sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really interested in that. Sometimes it's comic book news stuff because it knows I look at that stuff all the time, especially when I'm getting DC news ready for the show. So it'll pop up with that kind of stuff too. And when they have it in the headlines, it ticks me off. Because I like to watch the show and try to be surprised sometimes. Sometimes I try to stay away from spoilers. Like, honestly, before the Arrow show started this season, I didn't watch any of the trailers like I normally do. I just stayed away from them because I wanted to be more surprised when I actually watched the shows this season.
Yeah.
So, even though we talked about some stuff in DC News, I'd actually stayed away from the trailers on purpose. So, yeah, that's my rant.
No, but I think you're totally justified in it. I share your frustration completely. Because that's a... I think you could... It was pretty likely that Jason Todd was going to survive that. But
yeah, it was, but
it was possible that he died. It's Jason... We've talked about this. It's Jason Todd. The risk of him dying is way more present than any other character because that is a major part of that character's history.
Yep.
And I still am not convinced. Like, he still, I think, is at a higher risk of dying than any other character, even with that fake out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Connor is going to be a great addition to the Teen Titans with his kind of flawed background.
I agree. I also like it because it's just making it feel like the show is continually getting more comic booky.
Yeah,
it is. Which is what I want. Like, I want a live... Like, when I get a live-action Titans, this is what... I want Connor Kent, and I want a suited-up Hawk and Dove, and I want a suited-up Wonder Girl. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want Dick Grayson in jeans. Or
yeah, or, exactly.
Or Raven in a hoodie going just by Rachel. Like, that's not what I want. I want them as Titans.
Yeah, if we wanted to see a teen drama, we could watch other shows on the CW Network. Yeah, I could watch. Oh, man.
The only thing that I will say is that while the Superboy being able to save Jason makes sense, that still is... I'm sorry, that's like the definition of a deus ex machina. Like, he just, like, is conveniently in the area when Jason is thrown out of the window.
I know.
I get it. Like, I get it. It makes sense from a, like, all of the superhero people are being brought together, and that's the sort of thing that happens. But it was also like, come on. I would have preferred, because they still have not shown Starfire being able to fly, and I'm assuming that we're going to get to that point at some point, right?
I would hope so.
I would have preferred that being the moment where Starfire realizes that she can fly.
Yeah, that would make total sense. It'd make more sense than Superboy just happened to be right outside the window.
Because Superboy hadn't been part of the show at all. Like, basically, this episode basically existed to explain why the hell Superboy saves him out of nowhere, right?
Yep.
Whereas Starfire is directly involved in that, and we are seeing her exhibit more powers than she had previously shown in the last season. So we would have had that, like, when she's deflecting those bullets... She absolutely never did that last year.
Nope.
That would have been a moment for her to be like, oh, I can do this? Or maybe it's like, oh, yeah, I could do this, and for whatever reason, it was inexplicably choosing not to do this until now. Either way, that would have been a little bit better. But either way, it had to be who saved Jason.
Yeah. And it could have been just as easily Starfire as Superboy.
Yeah.
The answer. The ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything is 42.
That's right, Broad Speculation, and on the 42cast, we bring you drama-free discussions on television shows, movies, video games, novels, and comics. So don't bother thinking about the question, just go straight to the answer. It's only on the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
And we're back! Let's talk Arrow Season 8, Episode 1, Starling City. And joining us tonight, we have a special guest, Ashley Pauls.
Hello, thank you for having me back. I'm always excited to talk about Arrow with other fans.
Yes, I'm very excited about talking about Arrow, especially after watching this episode. We see this episode opens up on the island, and Oliver fires his arrow to signal the fishermen to come to his rescue. And I'm like, why are we back on the island? And then I see Batman's cowl where Deathstroke's is supposed to be. I'm like, what is going on? That happened. And then after that scene, we come back and Oliver goes home. Well, anyways, when Oliver comes home and sees his mother, Malcolm Merlyn is there and Tommy is instead of Walter. I was like, okay, what's going on? It got me really intrigued right away.
Yes, something's not normal here.
Did you know what was going on right away, Cletus?
Oh, sorry. I thought that we were getting an alternate Oliver at first, even when we got the initial reveal of it being an older Oliver on the island. It didn't totally click right away.
So you just thought it was an alternate Earth version of Oliver?
I thought we were going to get an alternate Earth Oliver initially, and then maybe the other Oliver was going to pop in. I thought we were going to see... What I thought was we were going to see something play out briefly and then have the other Oliver pop in. But I don't think I don't think it totally clicked for me until he said something about his own kids. I was like, oh, this is that Oliver, and he's just on a different Earth.
Right, and then we also see him look at the picture of Felicity and Mia. Mia as a baby. So that also clued us in that this was our Oliver.
Yeah. I thought this was an amazing premise for this first episode. It was... So for me, this was simultaneously everything I was hoping that this season was going to be, and then coupled with everything I was hoping this season wasn't going to be. I loved the alternate Earth storyline. Every single bit of it, it was ultimately just like an alternate version of season one, and you brought back all of the greatest hits. Plus, you had Renee and Dinah in there as well. It was awesome. It was such a great callback to early Arrow in that first season. And then throwing it on its head a little bit and having Tommy be the Dark Archer. That was so good. That was everything I would want in an episode that's sort of like an homage, like as a part of a season that's celebrating the history of that show. And then you also had, on the other hand, the flash forwards. What are they doing? What's the point of that?
The flash forwards kept taking me out of the story.
Yeah.
Because I'm not interested in that much. I wanted to see more of what was going on with the alternate Earth storyline. And then we kept having these flash forwards. I'm like, go back to the other story.
Yeah.
I was so frustrated because we could have had effectively 10 more minutes of character time with all of those guys that we didn't get. Because we're trying to set up what is effectively, we talked about this, Drew, last episode. I honestly feel like we're going to get a season-long backdoor pilot for Green Arrow and the Canaries.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, doesn't it?
And I don't think I like that because based on, and I know I'm only going on this first episode, but based on this first episode, this story has nothing to do with anything. Like, you're basically forcing me to watch another show in the middle of the show that I actually want to be watching.
Now, they may at some point bring in the future characters with Oliver. That's what I'm expecting to happen down the line. If it doesn't happen, then it doesn't make sense to even have it in the show.
And I think it's especially frustrating because this is like our last season, and it's only a half season, I believe, so we have very limited time to kind of get to see these characters and say goodbye to them. And I also agree with what you guys were saying. I felt like the flash forwards oddly kind of chopped up the story, which was really engaging, I thought, with Oliver and this alternate history thing going on.
It's the other thing about the flash forward, the characters are new to each other, even though we saw them last season. It didn't feel like they were meshing well together. It was like they were supposed to be meshing well together, but they actually weren't. You know what I mean? It did feel like it was the first episode of a show, of a new show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I was so frustrated by that because it did feel like I was watching a pilot. And I was like, but I don't want to be watching this right now. it was so frustrating. And also, but we have seen them work together. And then I'm going to be honest with you, and this is just my opinion, I really think that entire cast is not very good. Like, that overall, like, none of them are really like, oh, man, that they're nailing that character. Like, they all feel like they're trying too hard. Like, it feels like they've watched Arrow, and they're trying to be Arrow. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like they're trying to play those roles. I don't know. And I know I'm probably being, like, picky about it, but I'm having a very hard time getting into that storyline.
Yeah, you're being picky about it because the flash forward is acting like it's a new show, and we're getting the hiccups you would get with a new show, and the characters not meshing together very well. So you have that going on in the middle of a show that is meshing well together.
Yeah.
So it's like you're watching two separate shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, one thing I really liked about this episode was Diggle coming. I thought that was a cool addition to this episode.
That really got me when the door was locked, and it was like, you got me with that last time. I was like, I didn't think it was the real Diggle. Did you guys already figure it out before then? Because I definitely hadn't.
No, I hadn't either.
I hadn't either. You know, I was expecting him to be an alternate version of Diggle myself. So that was a great twist, I think. And it opens the door for Diggle to be joining him on these adventures he's going to be having for the rest of the season. So I kind of like that.
I do like that he has one partner. I have to admit, I am glad in some ways that Felicity's not going to be in this season for the most part, only because I would worry that they would slowly reunite the whole team. Whereas because she's not there, they have a built-in excuse to not expand the team beyond Diggle.
Right, yeah. which is cool, I think.
It's kind of going back to how the show first started, like it was Oliver and Diggle, and I kind of like that we've now come full circle. It's just these two longtime friends kind of doing what they're doing on their own and kind of maybe get back to focusing really in on their relationship and their journey together, which I think will be pretty cool.
Yeah, especially if one of them can get a Green Lantern ring.
Yes, fingers crossed. Yes.
Hey, did you guys think, I honestly for a second towards the end of the episode I thought that Tommy was going to join them.
Yeah, I was wondering that too until he disappeared.
Well, I until when Oliver just sort of like walked away, it was sort of weird. Like he sort of like walked in the room, was like, hey bud, and then kind of walked away. I was like, oh, that was weird. That's not how I thought that interaction was going to go. I thought he was going to have him join him, and then obviously that didn't happen. That's okay. Like, I'm okay with that, but I was really convinced before that it was going to be Tommy joining them, which honestly, that would have been interesting only because that's new. Like, we've not really seen Tommy and Oliver work together as, you know, crime fighters.
Right. Now, Laurel ended up going with them, so I wonder how long she's going to stick around or if we're going to see her die at some point.
I don't think she's going to... If she dies, she might die in the same way that these other universes are getting swallowed up. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe we'll see them get brought back. I think, by the end. I don't know. Because the other thing, if you keep in mind, one thing I thought was a little odd with the implication with this is that Harry Wells is dead now, right? Like, that's that same Earth.
Okay, what Earth was that supposed to do? They didn't come out and specifically say it was Earth 2, but that's the implication. I thought it was Earth 2.
If that's the Earth that Laurel's from, that's that Earth. We know she came from Earth 2.
Now, refresh my memory. Did she go back to Earth 2 at some point? Because I can't remember.
The implication was that she did, and then she does also say, what are you doing on my Earth? Now, it's possible that she went to a different Earth where she was not a villain on that planet, but most of that planet jives with what we know about Earth 2, right? You've got these dark mirrors of characters.
Right.
The only thing that doesn't make sense is I believe And Ashley, you might remember this too. If you, I don't know, if you do, you watch Flash?
I'm way behind on it, unfortunately.
When they first introduce Earth 2, at some point there's some TV thing that says that Robert Queen is the Green Arrow, and that would be an error in that regard. It's such a small Easter egg in the background that I honestly don't care if I get it wrong. But if you, unless you're saying that she goes to a different Earth that was not her original Earth, it's that Earth. And so Jesse Quick and Harry are dead right now.
Yeah. Unless they escape somehow.
Which is certainly possible. She is a speedster.
Yeah. She's a speedster, and Harry's a genius.
Well,
and they,
not anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. He's not a genius anymore. But they still had the device for going between worlds, so it's a possibility. But I'm guessing we're not going to see them. One thing I did like in this episode is when Oliver goes to talk to Malcolm Merlyn, because he's for sure that Malcolm's the Dark Archer, the Monitor shows up. So I like that they had that short interaction between them, kind of explaining what was going on, why he was on that Earth to get that Dark Star particles. What they're going to use it for, I don't know. That's part of the mystery.
I do hope that we see, I really hope we keep this format of him hopping to other multiverse stuff. I'm hoping that we're not just getting that once.
Well,
and then just chilling in the main Earth for the most part. That would be kind of a bummer, especially because this one was so good. I'm greedy. I want more of it.
Well, next week's episode's called Hong Kong. I can tell you that.
Mm.
So it feels like we're going to be going through different versions of the different seasons of Arrow, maybe on different Earths. Oliver has to finish some tasks or something.
I think that's great. I think that's an amazing way to go through a last season, is to basically go through the history of the show, but with a twist. That's awesome. I do hope we continue through that.
So, yeah, I'm hoping the second episode is just as good as this episode was.
And if we maybe, if they just detach the flash forwards and make them an optional thing that you can watch on CW Seed or something like that. That would be great.
Skip forward.
I don't think you're going to get that. That's just wishful thinking. So I'm curious. I'm curious what's going to happen next. Are we going to see any other characters from any of the other shows maybe popping into Arrow for a special guest appearance?
I would think in whenever they do a season 2, season 3 homage, I would think Flash would pop up.
I would hope so.
Right, because that's about when he showed up.
Yeah.
Is those two seasons. So I would think we would. It feels like, based on this one, and maybe this episode is the exception and the rest of the season is different, but if the other episodes are like this, I feel like we're going to be getting a tour of the history of Arrow, which I'm totally on board with. And in theory, if you're doing that, Flash should definitely pop up at some point.
Yeah, that would be cool.
The one thing I just want to mention real quick, with both this and what Flash is doing, I love how big they are making Crisis. They are building Crisis up to be. They're not just letting it wait until right before the crossover starts. There are at least two shows that are heavily focusing on this being a crisis. It is a truly big cataclysmic event, which is what it should be like.
Go ahead, Ashley.
You can definitely feel the tension building, even starting with last season of Arrow. I've been waiting for the crossover event pretty much since Arrow ended, and I don't even watch all the shows. I'm behind on a lot of them, but you can just kind of feel it is building to this big epic event, and I can't wait to see how it ends. There's a lot of sense of foreboding, especially since we know this is kind of the end of Oliver's arc. So I'm super curious to see how they wrap all this up and what the ramifications for the other shows will be as well once this crossover is over.
Yeah, just like in this show, Flash is... It's having a big impact on Flash, too, with its season 1 opener last week. and with episode 2 that we're talking about this week. How surprised were you guys to find out that the Green Arrow on this Earth was Adrian Chase?
That was definitely a twist I did not see coming. Like, that was, and the whole time he was on there, I was trying to figure out, is he actually still evil in this universe? Is he actually trying to help the good guys? So that was another cool little twist to kind of keep us off guard.
Yeah, it was. And finding out that Tommy was the Dark Archer instead of Malcolm, that was a nice twist too.
Yeah.
And the whole reason behind Tommy becoming the Dark Archer and behind the undertaking was because that Thea had overdosed on vertigo on her 18th birthday, which was very devastating to him. Because, you know, basically after Oliver was out of the picture, Tommy was the big brother to her, so.
One thing I just thought was really cool that this episode, I thought, did really well in really subtle ways was showing the consequence of Oliver not being on that Earth. Yeah. Right? So that Thea dies because Oliver isn't there to save her from the overdose. Adrian Chase becomes the Green Arrow because Oliver's not the Arrow and doesn't kill his dad. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was just those little different ways that things changed. Like, some things obviously changed, like Malcolm not being the Dark Archer, I don't think has anything to do with Oliver, but other things, other changes were clearly because, good or bad, Oliver wasn't there. You know, bad Thea dies, but good, Adrian Chase isn't the psychopath.
Yep. And it was interesting seeing him as the Hood.
I kind of liked it. I'm not gonna lie.
Maybe he should be the one taking over for the new show.
I would be lying if I said I didn't enjoy him more, but that's just me.
All right. Any other thoughts on Arrow before we wrap it up?
I'm just excited to see where it goes from here.
This was a really exciting. Yeah, I totally agree with Ashley. This was a super exciting premiere for me. I mean, like, I can honestly, like, the present stuff with Oliver was so good that as frustrated as I am with the flash forwards, I don't really care because the rest of it's so good.
I know. This was a great episode to start off the final season of Arrow, and it exceeded my expectations. All right. Well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Ashley?
Oh, just thank you again. I always love talking about Arrow with other fans of the show. And you can find me blogging and occasionally talking about movies with the Earth Station 1 podcast.
Well, I thought I heard that you were going to be on another podcast, not on the network. Maybe talking about The Mandalorian?
Yes, I am very excited about that. I've already pre-subscribe to Disney Plus, so waiting for that to drop in a couple weeks actually now, so I'm really looking forward to diving into that show, and will help hold me over till episode 9.
All right, do you have any shout outs, Cletus?
We mentioned, well, we talked about it in our DC news, but I got a shout out about the Watchmen premiere. If you do have HBO or you're thinking about checking it out when HBO Max rolls out, it's pretty good. Like, I really enjoyed it.
I know. He's getting me excited to watch it, and I'm trying to hold off. trying not to get HBO. I will be definitely getting HBO Max when it comes out, so. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about Star Wars The Rise of the Skywalker final trailer, because it looks amazing. And since you're on here, Ashley, and I know you're a big Star Wars fan, I'm curious to hear what you thought about the trailer.
Oh, I loved it. I thought they did a good job, like, showing us a lot of really interesting imagery without necessarily giving away a lot of spoilers. Like, I still don't know exactly what the plot will be, but I'm super curious to find out. So I thought it was a great final trailer. I won't admit how many times I've watched it so far, but I am looking forward to the movie.
I can tell you I've watched it 3 times already.
Oh, mine is slightly more, but
oh man, I wasn't, because I got so much DC stuff going on, Star Wars wasn't really on my radar. I knew the movie was coming out in December. I was excited about it. But after seeing this final trailer, I'm like super excited about it now.
Oh yeah, I think this is a great trailer just to kind of put it back on everybody's minds and just to get everyone speculating before the movie comes out in about just about under 2 months now.
All right, well, if you'd like to discuss anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we're going to be talking Aquaman, Batman, Flash Forward, which I know Cletus is excited about, Justice League, Jimmy Olsen, and of course all the DC television you could think of, except for Watchmen. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go. You sure this is necessary? The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.